1 hour in the books, two to go. No Dave today. He'll be back tomorrow. Nate and Katie with you right up until 9 o'clock. Emily Campagno set to join us at 7:30. Scott Howard Cooper just after the 8 o'clock hour. Henrik Stenson winning the Open Championship over the weekend. We had a little bit of talk about that, and we posed the question, you know, when you're looking at a championship, like, would you prefer, I guess, a close matchup or sheer domination? Interesting point brought up on the text line. You know, when it's your team, you probably want a blowout. Because I think the person that texted is a Warriors fan and said, hey, it was a great series, you know, and it sucked to lose. But frankly, if you had told me you were going to win, we were going to win, I would much rather just take a blowout. Just get it done. And I can understand that perspective. If it's my team, you like to see it close, but I think we could all do without the stress, right? I mean, just get to the fun part at the end.
Well, either way.
And especially if it's a regular season game.
Either way, when it's a blowout, regardless of which team you're rooting for, you don't have to deal with the stress.
That's it. I mean, I'm okay with – I want – championship games between teams that I have no rooting interest. I would like for that to be close because I want it to be fun. But if you're just talking about any sort of regular season, whatever, get it over quickly. I got crap to do. And there's other stuff on TV, right? Let's be done by halftime. Can we? Pretty please?
You're not really that fan, are
you? Well, think about it like a Sunday of football. You got football going on all day long. There's a lot of games to watch. There's a lot of channels to see.
Yeah, but that's why you can flip back and forth between multiple games.
Yeah, but it's easier to do that. Like
who's your team? Are you the Niners fan straight up? Okay. So if the Niners are on, are you not turning to other games and watching that during the game? Are you like
that one? I'm not.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? The whole game?
The whole game.
Oh.
Now,
that's impressive.
The bonus part is over the last 2 years, the 49ers have gotten blown out on a relatively regular basis.
Oh, yeah, so you haven't watched very much.
And also, I mean, that's kind of the other reason that whether your team's good or bad, now that they're bad, I'd just as soon it be done by halftime because I know the longer it goes with it being close, they're just going to find a way to blow it.
Right.
It's gonna hurt that much more. So get it out of the way.
Right.
I'm done with it. Take your phone calls. Over the weekend, second part of the baseball season got back going. And really, the big excitement on the Oakland side is that they have an asset. Well, they have a couple of them. They've mostly been involved in trade rumors. But one in particular, starting pitching is always at a premium. Everyone's looking for extra arms going down the stretch run. So the A's got this guy by the name of Rich Hill. You probably heard of him because he's been pretty good. Matt, you've heard of him. You're familiar?
Yes.
Familiar with Rich? Good, so are we. Rich Hill's been pretty good. He got the start yesterday. It's getting to that point where maybe you're starting to showcase a guy a little bit. See if you can get a little bit of a bounty in return. Rich Hill on the bump yesterday as the A's sought a sweep of the Blue Jays, and it didn't go so well.
Five
pitches. And, you know, Captain Obvious here, Katie, but...
Oh, I love him.
What a frustrating thing to be dealing with when you're having such a great season. Just to have that kind of recurring... I don't know, I'm sure there's been something in your long athletic career that has been just a nag. I mean, I know you had back problems, but that's like a big thing. If someone has back problems, a blister, or like I remember I had plantar warts when I first got into college, and it's so frustrating because it's such a stupid little thing that it just doesn't go away.
So I had plantar fasciitis.
Okay.
Fasciitis, which is it feels like you're walking on gravel. Mm-hmm. It's just knots on the bottom of your foot, and it's painful, but you play through it. Also, when I was playing in Houston, because of the humidity there during the summer, we would change our socks and shoes halfway through practice. I mean, because you just could not keep your feet dry. I had blisters on kind of the pad of my foot under your big toe, kind of that area, that were the size of golf balls. Ew. And they were deep. And I played through it. So this is something for me, and that's not to say anything. I have never played baseball, softball. Mm-hmm. I don't understand this. I don't understand A, how do you get a blister on your finger? Is that just a normal thing
well,
from pitching?
I'll show you. Well, I mean, it's not like normal, but, you know, as you're gripping like a fastball across the seams,
right.
The way it comes off, it's just going to rub that same spot over and over. Like I told you earlier about how when I was in Little League and would pitch, if I didn't cut my fingernails, the seam would create a hangnail in no time. It would just rip it clean off. And so, I mean, it's just wearing in that same spot. And, of course, with a blister, you kind of have to just sit on it and wait.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think that if...
But we're at the midway point of the season. I would think right now that you would be pretty calloused up and it wouldn't... Blisters would be fairly uncommon for a pitcher at this point.
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those freak things that once it starts, it doesn't go away. And I would imagine if they were, I don't know, competitive right now and weren't maybe looking to showcase Rich Hill for the trade deadline coming up in the end of July, then he would probably be on the bench. I mean, they scratched him for the first start coming out of the All-Star break. Bob Melvin said, as you heard Ken Korak say, that there shouldn't have been any setbacks.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I would think that if they weren't looking to maybe move Rich Hill, he probably would have spent another week or two letting it heal.
The unfortunate thing in this is, like you said, when it's something that once you've got it, it's you know, it's hard to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike other things that once you get it, it's hard to get rid of. Penicillin doesn't help in this situation.
No, blisters on your fingers.
There's not much you can do
for it. It's the wrong kind of blisters, Katie. Matt's just shaking his head. So,
I know. I'm
so we
sorry,
got that.
Matt. Sorry, not sorry. Mm-hmm.
Being an A's fan sucks sometimes.
Oh,
man.
So you were shaking your head at that, not
that too,
about my
but,
penicillin.
Well, no, yeah, I'm just in a dark place when it comes to the Oakland
A's.
Huddled in my Oakland A's blanket over here, just
so
crying
we'll pose the question,
to
Matt. I'm gonna have you answer this when we get back, and hopefully we can get something off the text line. Maybe you call us 339-1140 as well. But it's that time of year. We bring this up with the A's all the time. You know, when they're in this spot, but what are your expectations even for the rest of this season?
Yeah.
Is it simply to get something in return for a Josh Reddick or a Danny Valencia or perhaps Rich Hill, John Axford, I don't know, Ryan Madsen, any of those guys? Or do you still think at this point that, I don't know, they could raise a little bit of hell in that division? I know that that's kind of a long shot, but this is always an interesting time for A's fans. They're 14 and a half games back. This tends to happen. What are your expectations for the rest of the year? We'll discuss that when we return. It's The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.
That's more like it, Matt.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know what he's been playing. It sounded like elevator music. This is right up my alley.
Distracted easily, Katie Christensen.
I am.
Nate Goodyear with you. It's our final effort of this iteration of the show. Dave will be returning tomorrow. I'll slide.
When you use big words.
Big words. I got a word a day calendar. I'll be sliding over to the wise ass chair starting again tomorrow.
I love you in that chair, though.
I don't mind it either. It's pretty good, and frankly, it's a lot less stress than doing this job.
It is.
I'm just always
in this chair, so it doesn't matter.
I know you're stationary.
I know.
It's good. I asked you going into the break, you know, and Matt. I'll get your answer on this real quick here in just a second because I have another question. But, you know, expectations for the A's from here on out. I know that that's real kind of ABC radio basic type of stuff, but it's that time. And, like, the thing about this A's team, you know, again, 40 and 52, they're 14 and a half games back. So it's not looking good. But it also hasn't been a total disaster to this point, right? I mean, they're by far not the worst team in the American League. So they got that going for them. And before you answer that, Matt, I asked Katie another question during the break. If you were to score a goal playing soccer, do you know how you'd celebrate? Do you know what you'd do? Do you have any idea? Because Katie gave me I was never really a celebrator. And I'm like, dude, neither was I, but like scoring a goal is a huge deal.
And I lose my mind
just playing FIFA.
What did I say to you, though, after I said, I was never really much
she
of a
said,
celebrator?
Maybe if I played a sport where there was such a premium on scoring, then I would have...
If scoring was so rare.
I'm a sucker for the crowds, like that huge section. So if it's on the side, the goal side.
Straight for the fans.
I'm
huh?
heading straight for the fans. And like, I mean, I'm not from Iceland. Yeah, I'm not from Iceland, but lead the fans in like that Iceland clap, something or another. I would do something involving the fans. Or if I'm on the side of the opponent's fans, just like give them the shush when you run by them. If I was that cocky and good.
I told her I'd get carded because my shirt would be coming off. Like fast. That's
no
like the first thing. Oh, yeah, they do. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
There's a little Furby over here.
We want prove.
I'm snuggly, man.
We want proof that Bigfoot
exists.
Then
again, if you're a soccer player, you can pretty much live without your shirt on. Yeah.
That's right. So that's.
Or if you're J.R. Smith.
That's exactly. I was just curious. That's
oh my
all.
Gosh!
Because yeah. I did laps the other day scoring a goal on FIFA. I mean, granted,
in your
it was
living
a
room?
Big
did
one.
You go,
yep.
Did you go up and down your stairs?
I did. I'm like running around. I got my arms up. I'm just like, ah!
I broke my bed playing FIFA. I scored a goal in like the 90th minute in an online game, and I was down like by three goals, and I scored three quick ones, and then I just belly flopped on my bed, and the thing collapsed on me.
Wow!
But, I gave the TV double birds the other day because I actually saved a penalty kick. Like that never happens.
And I'm good at that. Actually,
the computer always assigns a penalty when they're down by like a goal or two, and there's maybe I don't know 30 minutes left. So it's always It's definitely rigged. It's almost certainly rigged. So when you save one, it's just like, in your face, computer. Anyway.
You guys need help, like serious help.
No, you need to play FIFA.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
You know what? The most exciting thing I can say about video gaming is the fact that last week I saw that the original Nintendo is going to be released again. And
Pocket Edition.
I can get on board with that. Mm-hmm.
It'll be fun until you realize how trash 8-bit games are in 2016.
I don't care.
Get with the system.
The first time I was here in Sacramento, when I was here, 2007 through 2010, I had the original Nintendo, a refurbished one, and I really enjoyed playing that game.
How was the world like in black and white?
Oh, whatever, Matt. You know what? Some things are just better in the original. Does that argument not work here?
Nope. Not FIFA
anymore.
Exists.
Although Super Spike Volleyball was a pretty baller game for the regular Nintendo, but
to get off of this, because
no,
I have
we
nothing.
Can stay.
Tell us about
I,
the A's,
I have
Matt.
Nothing to contribute.
All right.
To.
What do you think, dude?
See,
I feel like this time
from happy to sad.
Yeah,
now.
I feel like this time last year we were having the same discussion, but during the midday show, where it's just like, okay, you know it's coming. I mean, you know guys are gonna get moved. You just kind of wonder who it's gonna be. And as an A's fan, I guess, how do you deal with that impending teardown?
The same way I deal
rebuild
with it every
on the
year.
Fly?
You don't buy jerseys with names on the back of them because the likelihood of them sticking around for longer than 2 or 3 years is very, very rare. Josh Reddick is a very rare commodity, and most likely he'll be on the outs. With the Oakland A's, though, the expectation-wise, it's the same thing you have every year. You expect them to move pieces that they don't believe they'll be able to pay or hold on to. So maybe a Josh Reddick. I expect a Sonny Gray to be on the market, a Rich Hill. And they will get back prospects that you've never heard of. Guys that may come out of AAA in 2 or 3 years that you'll have no
Some
idea
of them
who they
end up
are.
Being really good.
And they will explode. Josh Donaldson is a perfect example. He was a catcher in AAA, and I used to watch him in Sacramento as a catcher. And then he came to the Oakland A's, and he played. That was my phone, by the way. Shut up.
Get it together.
It's all my happy A's fans with me. But he came to the league, and they put him at third base, and it was his really first time playing that position. And he exploded, and now he's one of the best players in the game.
Arguably the best defensive third baseman in baseball,
right.
Too, not just to go with one of the best bats.
But so, this is not a new thing for the A's.
It's every year.
So as an A's fan, do you get on board with this? Are you okay with it? Do you just expect it? Or do you want their philosophy and approach to the game to change?
Well, if you want to be mad, which it's really easy to be mad, you are supporting the wrong team. Mm-hmm. If you are a fan of the Oakland A's, you're a fan of the brand. You're a fan of the team. You're not a fan of players because you can't hold on to them. It's easy to get really frustrated because A's fans really do not like Lou Wolf because he's repeatedly shown that he's not going to spend any kind of money on this team. In Billy we trust is something we say all the time because Billy Bean just has to put these teams together.
Right.
And if they hit, they hit. Most of the time they miss. It's frustrating, but you just support the team, and that's why when they make it there, it's so special. But
well, generally, the A's have three kinds of seasons. They have the season where going into it, they know they've got something. Maybe they'll spend a little bit of money, try to add, you know, when I think of, you know, when they add guys like Billy Butler on short contracts or something like that, go out and grab a guy for a one-year deal. I thought when they signed Jim Johnson for big money a couple years ago, that was kind of a go for it type of move.
The indication
so
that
you've
might
got
be
that.
Changing their
you,
approach.
Yes, you've yeah. got. Well, I mean, it's three types of things. Every now and then they'll kind of go for it because they'll feel like things have come to a head with their prospects, and if they're like one or two big pieces away. So you got that. You've got the full on rebuild mode, which is not what they're doing. Or you have a year like this where it's like, well, we'll see what happens at the All-Star break. We've got some pieces. might be a year away. Eh.
Couple of A's fans weighing in here on the text line. This one interesting to me from the 916. Lifelong A's fan here. Expectation? Sadly, it's only trying to be competitive at best. Anything more is a bonus, like playoffs or a division pennant, whatever those are. On the Hill injury, this is why we can't have nice things.
There you go.
why don't we get any breaks?
A lot of people are still ripping Billy Beane and still ripping the A's for the move a couple years ago when they traded Yoenis Cespedes in order to get John Lester so that they can make that push. And that trade ended up actually...
That was the one that was slipping my mind.
It hurt the team.
Yeah.
And because the team was never the same after that. But what a lot of people don't understand is, like you just said, the A's window to go all in that moment is super small. Because the likelihood that they're going to spend the money to bring back Cespedes and to keep Donaldson and to keep these players in here after being kicked out of the playoffs twice in a row by the Tigers because they outpitched you every single year. Mm-hmm. You had to make that move if you're the A's because you have to go for it. It didn't work. It sucks. It's frustrating. And they had to break up the team. It was inevitable. It was going to happen. Now, the Josh Donaldson trade is still a head scratcher because you're like, why did you make that move? You had another year. But Billy Beane's philosophy in that was he's in peak prime form right now, which he was and he still is. I'm going to go out and I'm going to try and get prospects right now that could potentially pick me up 1 or 2 years down the road. Now, that didn't work, but Billy Beane's game is in prospects.
Could you imagine,
it's fair.
Imagine what Billy Beane would be able to do if he had someone willing to pay the money? I mean, because he has shown that from a perspective of scouting talent and making the most out of what you have, he's brilliant.
Well, I believe the A's would certainly have a lot more success if they had the money behind it, of course. But I think the one who suffers most for it, Billy Beane has certainly a hard job, but you know who suffers the most for it is Bob Melvin.
Oh, stop it.
Because Melvin has to suffer through creating these lineups and dealing with these injuries and working to try and put a winning product out there on the field. So I feel, and he gets a lot of the flack and he gets a lot of the criticism for it where I empathize for him. A
couple more from the text line before we head to break. From the 916, I've gotten used to the fire cell. I like watching the new guys surprise the league and do very well. And then from the 530, the A's have become the farm team for the rest of the MLB, and it really sucks.
Yep. Yeah, that's not new, though.
The A's were the AAA team for the Yankees for a long time in the early 2000s.
Long time. Hey, we'll have more A's talk throughout the show, but when we return, we've got some sports and legal business analyzation that we need, so we're going to have on Emily Campagno, Tom Brady, Draymond Green, and some interesting laws coming out of New York that are actually
affecting the NBA.
Yeah, affecting the NBA and some college games. So we'll talk with Emily about that. Excuse me, when we return, it's a drive. Sports 1140 KHTK. Emily Campagno to join us shortly, sports and legal business analyst. Got a lot we got to break down there between all of the various legal happenings. We had her on Friday talking about Lance Armstrong. If you missed that, it was so riveting we chose to have her back today. So we'll check in with her shortly. First, want to let you know you can join Sports 1140 for the Sacramento Whiskey, Wine, and Spirits Festival August 19th at the California Museum. Step back in time and enjoy an opulent party reminiscent of the Great Gatsby era with samplings of the finest whiskeys, wines, and spirits from around the region. In addition, enjoy live entertainment and delicious bites from some of Sacramento's premier restaurants. Purchase your tickets at KHTK.com.
I love when you ad-lib.
Anyway, so...
Yeah, Emily's pretty popular.
Well, I would imagine
I'll say
so.
After having her on Friday, she was a hit on the show. I was a little worried because we talked Lance Armstrong the entire time we had her on in that federal case that... the government is filing against him for nearly $100 million, calling him a doper, a liar, and a dealer, which wow. I thought was pretty strong words. But I was worried. We were geeking out and loving it and totally being nerds. And the text line just lit up. It was crazy.
Never even made it to Tom Brady.
No,
at the time, on Friday, there was still talk of him taking it to the Supreme Court. And we knew that the chances
attempting to.
Well, yeah, right. Attempting to take it to. And we knew that the chances of that were extraordinarily slim, that even if he were to file that appeal, the chances of his case even being heard were extraordinarily slim. That was on Friday.
They only go over about 5% of the cases brought to them.
So then over the weekend, we heard that Tom Brady had decided he's not going to be pursuing that appeal in terms of he told his guys to chill. His lawyers right. not having it. He's just going to eat his 4-game suspension. The twist being he is going to allow the Players Association to pursue the Supreme Court ruling.
Which this is what makes it interesting to me. And this is what I want to get Emily's insight into, because the Patriots and Tom Brady did a very smart thing in terms of, you know, knowing that this 4-game suspension was potentially on the horizon. And for a lot of players, a 4-game suspension can be a pretty significant blow to their paycheck. But they restructured his contract. So basically all of his money that he's making is in the form of a bonus. And his salary for the season is significantly minuscule. And so a 4-game suspension for him, I believe, is about $253,000 worth of salary.
Which is what Henrik Stenson lost due to the drop of the pound, correct?
Yeah, just about a little bit
roughly.
More. Yeah.
That's kind of interesting when you think about it that way. A 4-game suspension for Tom Brady is the same as, you know, England bouncing from the EU, that effect on the pound over the course of 1 week.
I know this is a little weird because I know this is completely off topic, but it is on topic. It's a tangent. But the NFL's, you know, everyone's trying to expand. And one of the places the NFL's, have they played a game there yet, or are they going to play a game in England?
Oh, multiple, yeah.
Okay, so I'm wondering, because I know, you know, when I was playing in the WNBA, I had to file a tax return in every single state that I played in. But I wonder what happens when it comes to playing in, you know, in
overseas.
A foreign country, like the Kings played last year in Mexico City. I wonder how that works with income taxes. Also, is your salary, what does it do in terms of, you know, their paycheck can't be impacted by the pound, right? It doesn't change anything. It can't.
I don't know.
That's a weird question. I never really thought about that.
Maybe you ought to save that for our sports business / legal analyst. Maybe she'll know a little something on that.
There's too many things to talk to her about. I'm not going to get into her with one of my tangents.
It seems like the type of thing that you would pay someone to handle for you. It seems very complicated.
Yes.
Joining us back on the show once again, so fabulous on Friday, we just decided we'd do it again. Legal and sports business analyst Emily Campagno joins us on KHTK. Hi, Emily. It's Nate and Katie again.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us a little bit earlier today. I'm sorry for the early wake up, but hey, not a lot of sympathy because we get up at 4 a.m.
Hey.
So.
Wow.
I'm just putting it in perspective so you feel better about the early wake up.
Emily, we didn't have a chance to talk to you on Friday because we got so far into the Lance Armstrong thing that we didn't have a chance to talk to you about Tom Brady. And of course, over the weekend, there was a little bit of a shift. He said that he's not going to have his people pursue the stay of suspension, or however you want to put it, but he is going to let the NFLPA take up the charge. Now, it sounds like he's going to just swallow that 4-game suspension. So with that being said, what's the purpose of letting the NFLPA take up this case?
I think it's frankly optics, and at this point, as a citizen, I'm slightly glad to hear that they're not necessarily pursuing the Supreme Court, but I think he's also, as we get into the season and it's coming around the corner, he's demonstrating a focus to the season and the team. I think it's him, again, for optics, basically saying, look, I'm putting this behind me. My union is here to represent me in this capacity. They're acting as my, you know, attorneys, you could say, and therefore I'm going to focus on football, and I'm going to let them do their job.
Well, Emily, isn't the whole issue, if you really look back at this, and I know that it has been such a long, ongoing process with this whole Deflategate saga, but it all comes down to the fact that a lot of the players feel that Roger Goodell has an unnecessary amount of power and can wield it however he wants. So is the appeal allowing the Players Association to kind of continue with this appeal more about trying to address that issue?
That's a great question, and yes. And here's the thing that I would like everyone to know in terms of how the CBA plays into part of this. Remember, we talked last time about negotiating a CBA, and I said how both parties have to have concessions and they have all their interests on the table and they have to come to an agreement. So the thing to remember is that any CBA that's in effect has been agreed to by both parties. And the issue here, I mean, there are a few, but what it really boils down to is whether Goodell was technically authorized to serve as or designate the arbiter in these discipline appeals. We know that he was. That's what they agreed to. But the whole point is that that arbiter had this duty to be fair and consistent. He had to be necessarily neutral. And so the players are basically arguing, look, this guy isn't that. He's not necessarily neutral, and he's been making a host of decisions that have impacted us arbitrarily and kind of has done so without precedent and without really laying out this followable procedure or path that we adhere to. But my point is that him, his actual activity to do that, that was totally agreed upon. So for me, when I see this, I have to say it's a little ironic to me because having dealt with this as a federal attorney, to me, I'm like, well, this is what you all agreed to. Mm-hmm. And I'm not speaking to his neutrality. I'm not speaking to any of that. I'm just saying to the actual legality of this point, and now this flag that the NFLPA has taken up, having been a part of these kinds of negotiations for so long, I just have to say that it's a little ironic to me, like I said.
Well, and to that point, they agreed to the terms of this. They basically handed him over this power, and whether or not they were really paying attention like they should have, because it goes back to CBAs and how closely are individual players really paying attention. You've got a select few that kind of speak for everybody, but they're supposed to meet with their entire teams. Your representative for each team is supposed to meet, and they're supposed to be the voice. So to me, a little bit, it's like, okay, they realize now that they made a big mistake, did not pay attention. What kind of recourse do they have now? How can they change this now? Is this suit or this appeal by the Players Association part of that process to making steps in that direction?
I mean, the only thing that would change this at this point now is to renegotiate it. Because the fact that the courts have heard this element of it and have not joined in, mm-hmm. like that's the whole point, is that oftentimes, so if you think about this as kind of two tracks, you have the track within the NFL, and then just think about it more globally, like you have your contract between your employers and your employees, right? And it's the system that you have agreed to. And then now these employees are arguing, but wait, they acted outside the system. You know, they acted outside the necessary neutrality. So yes, they technically did, they acted within their bounds, but not in a manner that's consistent. So look, we're arguing against it. So then they take it up and they exhaust the track within the program. And then they go outside of it to say, okay, look, we've exhausted our procedure within this system, so now we need outside help. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. And the outside help didn't come to the rescue. So the outside help basically said, no, you're fine. And quite often, the federal courts do say, oh, you acted out of bounds. In fact, like for example, many government agencies, including the Social Security Administration, for example, like frequently gets remanded back to the agency saying, yes, you guys are, you know, you're way out of bounds. Figure this out again. Take it over. Here you go. So it was interesting to me that there was not even a semblance of that happening here. Mm. So my point is that it's not as if the courts are like, yep, oh, we totally saw a problem and you guys have to fix it. They were like, no, it was totally fine. And so for there to actually change Goodell's or the commissioner's ability here, they need to change the actual CBA.
Emily Campagno, sports business and legal analyst with us on The Drive. Emily, so as I try to work this through to the conclusion here, Tom Brady serves a suspension, but the NFLPA moves forward and ultimately wins their case. What is the victory for the union and what does that mean?
Well, we could see a few different options here. So first of all, as we know, he renegotiated his contract, so he wouldn't lose money on those games, right? So technically, we could argue, well, does he even have recourse for what the loss of that would mean? But it would go back to that. I mean, and I can think about it again or relate it to the listeners in terms of employee-employer relationships. And what's the loss suffered? And then that's how you basically argue what's due back. So for him, it's monetary and it's loss of opportunity. So here the damages would be easily proven, obviously, just monetarily. I'm not aware of sponsorships that were retracted or whatever. They could argue loss of jersey sales. You know, the franchise has a lot more argument, frankly, than Brady actually does. But that's what it would boil down to.
Emily, I want to switch gears a little bit with you because there's a lot of stuff going on in the state of North Carolina when it comes to sports in general. Last week, the Board of Governors for the NBA met about potentially moving the 2017 All-Star Game out of North Carolina because of some anti kind of LGBT laws that were passed by the state legislator. Then on top of that, the Duke Albany game was canceled after the New York governor canceled all non-state travel to North Carolina. I want to get your take on what's going on there. And I know this happened. The New York governor did this in 2015 also with the state of Indiana. But with everything that is kind of coming to a head after this law that passed in North Carolina, what is the potential for sports franchises to be able to, and you know, not even just franchises, but leagues, to be able to impact state legislation?
Here, I think it's tremendous. And the interesting thing is, I mean, you know, think about what the commissioner, the NBA commissioner said. And he was basically like, look, it's easy to say we're moving it, but we feel there's a constructive role for the league to play. And if we announce that we're moving it, what's the incentive to change, right? So I feel like there's kind of twofold large possibility to impact, to answer your question. There's number one, just that fact of, look, this game brings millions to the host city and all of the exposure and the actual direct financial impact there. But then there's also that kind of leveraging the platform that these leagues have to impact law specifically, that these guys can start that conversation to the point where these host cities and these host states will actually change things. And I think it kind of goes back to the larger national conversation of what leverage these athletes have in general and these leagues have. And it started to me a little while ago with, I think, that kind of spotlight with the domestic violence issues. And I think there's been a shift in public perception where prior to this, I think a lot of times perception was, look, they're athletes. Like, we see them as a uniform, not necessarily as a person. And then that's been shifted to, you have so much leverage. You have so many youth that are looking up to you or others that are looking up to you. You can actually be models of behavior. And then it's now become kind of a, you can use that as leverage for whatever cause that you are supporting and supporting. You can have this national conversation be of a much larger impact.
The other side too, Emily, I can't believe I'm like standing on this side of it, but does a state like North Carolina in this case have any recourse against someone like, say, the NBA or I don't know, the state of New York, who's basically saying, dude, we're taking money out of your pockets over this bill that you guys passed? You know, the NBA, I guess in this case, had an agreement with Charlotte, and again, they're going to cost them money. So can the state do anything in this situation?
Absolutely. So, you know, remember, it always goes back to the contract. And here, if they feel that the contract was broken, then they can absolutely have recourse. And that's the kind of thing where here it might be a little easier because oftentimes you're not sure, like, well, is it worth it to go after this? And is it worth how much money we're going to spend in courts and whatever? But here, given the financial incentive for these host cities to have these All-Star games and on all those kinds of events, it would absolutely behoove them. And the thing is, I'm sure in the contract, there's probably not a clause for, like, as long as we agree with your principles, you know? But part of this conversation, too, about these laws, these specific set of laws in general, is how it goes to the heart of the constitutionality of them. So you then on the flip side, you can argue, well, this might be a slam dunk because if we feel that, you know, our constitutional rights are being violated, then, of course, as employees, we should not be expected to be playing here, and as a league, we should not be expected to participate here. You know, it can kind of boil down to that level, and then the counter again is almost kind of Olympic style, where, well, this isn't, no one's forcing you. This was a voluntary contract that you agreed to, so therefore you kind of surrendered in a way any argument you had over, like, well, we didn't like the climate there. So, I mean, you know, you can see that it goes back and forth. But in terms of legally, you know, you cannot just get out of contract. You can't just break a contract for no reason. So absolutely, especially if it's a time that they find these laws were in effect, then that makes it, interestingly, a slam dunk in the other direction.
So aside then, like, from the PR standpoint of stepping up and taking a stand, sounds like the NBA is calling North Carolina's bluff a little bit, saying, man, fine, take us to court over this if you really want to. We don't think that this law is constitutional.
Right, they can argue that. Although, and then on the other side, I feel like there's been a lot of talk about, like, look, well, we just wanted to start this conversation. So on both sides. And then note, too, I think a lot of us who are in the sports industry, obviously, it's our world and we love it, of course. But at the end of the day, this is a really emotional issue. And for the states that have taken certain proactive steps in this direction, like North Carolina, think of them as being like, we don't care. Like, you think we care about this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This meaning the All-Star game coming in. Like, we don't care. Go ahead. These are our rights. This is our youth. These are our kids in the public school system. You know, this kind of this really heightened sense of emotion behind these set of laws, I think it's also to note here, because it's not just, I don't think they'll just turn over and take it, if that makes sense.
Well, Emily, earlier you mentioned the constitutional component of this argument, which I feel is very compelling, but you also mentioned it was a voluntary contract that they entered into with the state of North Carolina to host the All-Star Game. However, do they have any kind of leverage, they being the NBA, in the fact that this law was passed after that contract was signed?
Yeah, and I said that earlier, kind of the inverse, that yes, they could say, well, circumstances have changed. And so there are certain things. Think of a contract as this, you know, kind of thing in the sky, and it's like it's the end-all, be-all. But then there are certain things that can affect it or render it invalid. So if you say, you know, look, circumstances have changed and it makes it illegal for us to play there, or circumstances have changed and so you cannot fulfill your end, or I cannot fulfill my end, et cetera, then it's rendered invalid. But usually portions of contract, and usually 99.9999% of the time, certain clauses, just because part of it is rendered invalid, doesn't make the whole thing invalid.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't read their contracts between each other, I have to admit, but I would say that it is pretty ironclad, and I would be very surprised if there was some type of, you know, again, political climate that was written into it that would be an easy out. And maybe that's my larger point here, is that it would not be a clean break and from the NBA's perspective.
Emily Compon, sorry about that, Emily. Kind enough to join us. She's now become our Joe DiMaggio of great legal interviews here.
Yeah, no,
on KHDK.
You very quickly became our go-to. We just enjoy you so much.
I love that, you guys. I'm here anytime. I'm seriously happy to come on anytime. And as I'm speaking, I'm like, I hope this is making sense. So I really hope it does, and I welcome any more questions that you have, because, you know, please do let me know if I can be any more clear.
Hey, if you make sense to me, and I am in no way like a legal personality or really, I mean, gosh, I've seen CSI and Law and Order, so that's about my extent of it right there. So if it's making sense to me, I'm hoping that that's, you know, transferring over to our listeners. So thank you, Emily, so much for joining us again today.
Thanks, you guys. I'll talk to you soon.
And thanks, Emily. Emily Compagno, find her on Twitter at @CompagN and the number 0. @ Compagno, legal sports business analyst. And just great for us. I mean, it's interesting, all the various facets to that whole situation, where you're talking about, you know, whether it's, I guess, the North Carolina situation. To me, I see the NBA as much as anything calling their bluff and saying, really, I mean, you know, do your best. We don't think you have a leg to stand on.
Well, gosh, she made some really good points about how are they, being the NBA, supposed to come in here and tell us how to set our laws and determine our laws for our children, for our communities, for our state. They should have no right. I mean, I get the argument.
The answer for me is that they're not. They're just not doing business with
you. Yeah, exactly. But the game has already been scheduled to be there. And then on the flip side, which, you know, in the next segment, I really want to ask Scott Howard Cooper this question. If they do decide not to hold the All-Star game there in February, and it's really not that far away, what are they going to do? Like, how quickly can they award and determine who's going to host the games, and what kind of a situation does that put that host city in to be able to accommodate the change on such a quick turnaround?
So we did the legal part. We'll talk with the NBA guy. have that, plus Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, all kinds of things to talk with Scott Howard Cooper about. That's all coming up when we return on The Drive, Sacramento Sports Station, Sports 1140 KHTK.